Speaker in our section here is Dr. Adam Bristol, who is the Vice President at Aquila Partners in San Francisco. Before joining Aquila Partners, Dr. Bristol started by earning his BS in psychology from Binghamton University. He then went on to earn his PhD from Yale University, where he studied learning and memory. He then jumped coasts and went to Stanford University for a postdoc in neurobiology. And it's in California that he started the transition into capital management. He's held several investment positions before founding Aquila Partners, a hedge fund that focuses on investing in small capitalized biotechnology companies in January of 2010. In his current position, he handles all aspects of deal sourcing, including due diligence and negotiations. It's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Bristol, who concludes this session.
There you go.
Well, I'm really thrilled to be here. Thank you very much to the organizers for inviting me. It's really a great opportunity. I think one reason is because, you know, we all live so much kind of with on our to-do lists and things kind of right in front of your nose. It's a rare opportunity to kind of take a step back and reflect a little bit on your own professional trajectory and your own professional growth. Constructing this talk has really given me the opportunity to do that. But I will confess that I took some liberties in this process on the nature of this talk. You know, my colleagues who have performed did a great job of giving some very actionable information about their fields. You know, my reinterpretation of taking ideas to market was, well, what if the idea was you? And you had to go, you know, in from academia into the business world. How do you market yourself? How do you bring yourself to market? So that was kind of the theme that I took with it. And I can certainly, in some of our networking sessions, talk to you more about getting into specifically sort of the investment side of biotechnology and biopharma. You know, what does a biotech, you know, investor do on a daily basis? I'm going to touch upon that a little bit, but I want to also tell you about sort of the process that I went through when I transitioned from a postdoctoral fellowship and how did I land into the business world, which is completely a left turn. So here's just basically where I want to take you. I'm just basically give you a very brief overview of my background. And in that, I'm going to tell you about some of the issues that I faced towards the end of my postdoc that were sort of germane to this transition. Then I want to tell you a little bit about the transition, specifically the opportunity that I had, how did I find it, and where did that take me today? What did I learn from doing that? And then I wanted to tell you about my daily life. You know, I'm kind of wearing two hats now, which I'll describe to you. So time management, you know, Dr. Sharif in an earlier talk described how time management is so important. So I want to tell you, how do I actually try to manage my own time? What do I do on a daily? You know, what's a random Tuesday look like for me? And then lastly, you know, in terms of prospects and opportunities in the finance side of biotech, I want to give you sort of my you know, top-level view of it and also some concrete ideas of how you might approach, you know, what are different avenues you can take to try to enter into this field. And then lastly, I think was probably the most fun for me was jot down some of the lessons that I've learned. And you know, these hopefully will be a little thought-provoking for you. I think they're ones we can probably kick around in a Q&A session or in some of the networking sessions we have. But there's just some lessons that I wish that I had learned prior to going into it, but I kind of had to learn through the school of hard knocks a bit. Okay. Very quickly, in terms of my background, with Tim David kind of a nutshell, you know, more or less it was a very traditional career path up into my postdoc. You know, I went straight from undergrad, grad, postdoc. At that time, I had every intention of being a nutty professor my entire life. I wanted to be an academic. I enjoyed the work. I enjoyed the scholarship. I enjoyed the intellectual freedom and all the other intangible things that come around to it. But I think what happened was, as it got to be 2007, I was coming to the end of my NRSA. At that time, I was at Stanford. There were a few forces that all kind of converged at the same time. The first force is that Stanford as an institution, there's more of an entrepreneurial spirit there than any other institution I've been to previously. So I was acquainted with some of my peers who were doing things, collaborating with industry, they were going off and starting companies, they were going to be management consultants and things like that. So I had new role models and sort of new vistas were kind of opening up. And that was exciting. You know, also 2007, you know, the funding was tough. You know, grants were tough. I remember going into grad school in 97, you could be kind of in the top 30th percentile and get, maybe get your grant. By the time I was leaving in 2007, I had buddies who were getting, you know, top 9th percentile, and they thought they were on the cusp. So that doesn't seem like a very, you know, it doesn't seem like a very conducive environment to do your research. And then lastly, you know, the job market was tough then, it's tough now, it's always tough. And so I really, you know, I had to make some real difficult career choices of, you know, where is this current position going to be taking me? So lastly, when I did make this left turn into business, these were the four forces that I think, in retrospect, I think were the most important. First was having this new appreciation for science and industry. You know, I was doing basic work. I certainly knew of applied science and applied research in biomedical community, working with food and disease-based research. That wasn't what I was doing. You know, so I was talking to more friends, being in a more med school environment, I had a much more of an appreciation for the value of that. And that really excited me. I think the people and the job opportunity, I'll get to that on the next slide, but as I started to get out there and try to explore different possibilities, I met some really fantastic people, big idea people, people with a lot of gumption and proactiveness, and these are the kind of people I kind of felt like, these are my people. And I sort of felt like, you know, I kind of was on the same frequency as them. And then when the opportunity came to me, you know, it was something that I really wanted to jump on it, and I'll describe that to you in the next slide. And another factor was, you know, these new vistas. As a postdoc or a grad student, you guys are all experts in your area of research. I have no doubt about that. As a postdoc, I felt about an inch wide and a mile deep. But then, as I sort of was looking into the types of opportunities that were coming to me, all of a sudden I was getting into areas of biology that, you know, I hadn't really been exposed to since my early introductory biology book. I was reading it, ecology, ecology, immunology. So it was really, really fun to dig into the original literature in these areas in ways that I never had the opportunity or even the inclination as a postdoc. So that was really exciting. And then lastly, certainly, was kind of the financial upside, right? You know, I was by that time in my early 30s, you know, I was getting married, and, you know, when you start thinking about the, you know, the compensation difference between some of the jobs industry versus what you're making as a postdoc, certainly something to consider. And I really spent a lot of time with the three stakeholders as I made this transition, because it was a big switch. I felt it was a big switch for me. First, it was my family. You know, I sort of mentioned about some of the changes in my own personal life at that time. But my mentors and my psyche. My mentors meaning that, you know, I cared, like, what did my graduate kind of think? And all of a sudden, I was going to be the next, you know, professor at the University of Chicago or whatever. You know, what is he going to think of me if I sort of went to the dark side? You know, I've had other people in my academic life who went into business. They talk about them like they died. You know, they're not in science anymore. And like, you know, I was like, what are they going to think about me? And so I called up every one of my advisors. And I said, here's how I'm thinking about this. Here's where I am. So, you know, in a way to sort of get their feedback and maybe, you know, in a way to get their blessing too. But so they were one of the stakeholders. And lastly, I think my psyche was really important to me. You know, I want to be able to look myself in the mirror and say, you know, well, I've been a scientist. What a noble pursuit is to be a scientist. And that sits well with you when you sort of make the transition into a profit-based business position. I mean, you have to be able to look yourself in the mirror and say, the job I'm doing is valuable, the job I'm doing has meaning, it's going to be fulfilling to me. So what was this job that I went into? So basically, through a series of random connections that I'll describe and sort of in a second for it, I was introduced to some investors who at the time were running a large biotech-focused hedge fund. What is a hedge fund? A hedge fund is simply a private investment fund that uses a proprietary investment strategy to invest the money. And they use a whole bunch of different ways of doing that. But what these guys are doing, they're focusing specifically on biotech. But they were invested primarily in publicly traded companies. They want people to go to your e-trade account and buy shares and stock or public finance. But what they wanted to do is they wanted to make more investments in sort of VC-style investments in private biotech companies. These are the ones they were primarily interested in. Are there interesting technologies in university environments that we could spin out, create a little embryonic company? And they felt to do that effectively, they needed someone with a technical background to help them do that. And so they didn't have any PhDs on staff, and so I got connected with them, and, you know, they said, we'd love to hire you. So that was my job, to try to go out there and be a truffle pig and try to understand, is there some interesting technology out there? Pick it up and run with it by seeding with some early capital. And I can tell you a little bit more about that later. But how did I find it? I think this was sort of the interesting, I think for you, this is sort of the interesting part. Because even now, I think all of us get calls maybe once or twice a month from MBA students or from graduate students or postdocs or, you know, friends of friends of friends who are saying, I'm interested in doing that. What do you suggest when you get into the industry? You know, know, at that time, you know, I didn't know what I didn't know. You know, I was completely green. I remember the first thing I did was to go look at some business cards. Business cards? We need a business card. And I went to my advisor and said, you know, do you have business cards? Like, what kind of business cards in hand? You know, I do have them. I remember they gave them to me when I got on staff, but I haven't given any out, so I don't know where. So the point is, I got to, you know, sort of really kind of flying blind. But I knew the key that I wanted to do some learn more. And so I started networking as much as I could. By networking, there were a lot of, I'm sure they're here, you can see there's, you know, just industry events and industry groups or conferences. You like get out there, start talking to people. You know, you're going to explore different things, you're going to meet a lot of industry people. You never know where those relationships are going to be. So you really got to have a growth mindset, keep your mind open for new opportunities and new ideas. I was literally making cold calls to Bay Area companies. I'd go to their websites. One for me was just trying to get out there and meet people. And so how did I actually get this opportunity? It's a funny story, which I'll bore you with some other time, but it was basically a friend of a friend. A friend of a friend who worked for a biotech company. And his, you know, his investors, he said, we're looking for a gentleman to be a group, and I passed on your information. Yes, basically just went to them and struck up a very informal internship and said, listen, put me on a project. I don't know exactly what you guys do, but put me on a project and I'll just work for free. I want to learn just my own education, and that led to essentially a job. And where am I now? So after 3 years of working there, and that was essentially my B school in a way, you know, I went straight from pipetting into a lab to, you know, doing due diligence and trying to work on financial models and trying to understand these, you know, these investments from a financial perspective. The guy who hired me at BVF, who just joined forces and we're creating our own investment fund, which is called Philip Capital, which is launching on October 1st. Excited about, and then I'm also doing some investment banking on the side with a group called the Global Partners in San Francisco, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that. So here's kind of the daily life. This is going to give you a sense of what is sort of a typical day at day. And because I'm kind of wearing two hats, it can be a little frenetic and it can be a little challenging. But I've tried to break them down, and then in the middle here I have what I call table stakes. So table stakes in my mind are the types of skills. I think you need to have to kind of thrive in that sort of job. And then I think, you know, certainly I didn't have all those things, so I kind of wrote down here what I thought were the helpers. It sort of gave me a kickstart, gave me an opportunity to acquire or own those skills over time. So on the investment banking side, some of you may have heard of the term investment banking. You know, they're kind of piled on Wall Street. And kind of, what do these people do? You know, basically what a Global Partners does is it helps, you know, both public and private companies. Provide two services, your strategic advisory, and we help them raise money. And by strategic advisory, that means we act as their representative or their helper in mergers and acquisitions. If they want to buy something, they want to be bought, or any of the partners. So Dr. Healy talked about the collaborations between companies. Often they license technology for it. So very, biotech is a very collaborative industry. So we basically help as an advisor. And then on the hedge fund portfolio manager, you know, that's kind of the set of it is for investors to go out there and look for opportunities to invest money and hopefully generate return. So what is a typical day of a life science investment banker? My day typically looks like, you know, a lot of meetings and calls. So this again is a very kind of people person type of job. What we do is we have client companies we're working for, and we're always prospecting for new companies too, trying to stay abreast of companies' developments and stay close to them, because if there's not an opportunity to work together now, there may be an opportunity to work together in the future. So we're often sort of meeting and assisting our companies, and they're all around the U.S. We have one in England, and so in those cases, often by a conference call. A lot of things that we do are actually, we help on analytics and financial modeling. A lot of times companies will come to us and say, we have a phase one oncology product, we just have passed phase one, we're trying to raise money, we're trying to license it. So how much are we worth? How much is that worth? But keep in mind, this is a developing stage product, right? You know, biotech industries have about the slowest maturing assets out there, 10 to 12 years before they come to market. So for something that's been interact with a lot of investors, a lot of buyers at the fund. Because ultimately, they're our customers. So if we have a company that's trying to raise money, we need to know investors who may be interested in investing in that company. If we're trying to help sell a company or we want to help them license them, we need to know the scientists, business development, executives, who may be buying this company. And on the hedge fund side, you know, it's
sipping from the hose all the time. So in terms of, you know,
a couple of people have mentioned what a typical day is. Unfortunately, living in the West Coast, sort of being ruled by Wall Street hours, my day always starts before 6 a.m. There's certain housekeeping things that I have before the market opens, which is 6:30 West Coast time. And there's always going to be news flow. There's always things happening in the public markets that I need to stay abreast of. And we have all these processes of information capture things we put in place to do that. And then we're always running diligence processes. So as an investor, when you're looking at an opportunity, we want to put money into this, or we want to get out of it, it's always peeling layers of it, always continuing due diligence, you know, on different facets of the technology. So we've had, talk on the intellectual property, we've had a different go-to-market strategy. We tend to think of things sort of having a stool of three legs to it, so people, the management, technology, intellectual property. Those are those companies, but with the real fundamental pieces of biotech company. So what are the table stakes? This is strong interpersonal skills. You know, it's a people business. You're often playing a matchmaker, so you've got to have good interpersonal skills. I like to think of it as a good balance between quant and qual. Quant means you've got to be able to do some of the numbers. You've got to be conversant with financials. But I think you also have sort of qualitative skills to get a sense of what are good strategic fits, what are the strategic trajectories of companies around, so again, things that fit in a strategic sense. There has to be a lot of tolerance for ambiguity. I think you guys, as scientists, I remember, you always have good tolerance for ambiguity because, you know, you get your first few experiments done, it's looking like it's working, maybe it's not, you just don't know yet. But that's what happens a lot when you're in discussions, negotiations. You know, it's hard to read with the other side, you've got multiple players who are involved. So it has to be a tolerance for ambiguity. And then I think there's always perseverance and resolve, because things always take longer than you think they're going to take. So you've got to have that. And you must be travel tolerant on the banking side. If you're working for clients, it's a financial service, so we're often traveling to our client sites, as well as traveling to business meetings that your company is not other locations. So we spend a lot of time on the road. To be an investor, you know, a lot of things that, you know, you wouldn't be surprised to know, that things about critical thinker, attention to detail, being process oriented. And the last thing you want to do is either miss something that's critical, that's really germane to your investment thesis. You just hate that. You have to have an insatiable demand for information. You know, it's just disgusting, the number of RSS feeds and journal detox and just, you know, papers that I review every morning. It's a little perverse. And then again, perseverance and resolve. So what are some of the helpers? You know, I think the challenge here to be a banker, you can take these FINRA registration exams, Series 7, Series 63. They were actually awesome. You know, a lot of people hate them. They see them as just poop to jump through. But for me, who had no business school, who had no structured education, anything in terms of financial business side, these actually gave me an opportunity to, like, sit down and read a chapter and study it in the way that I was comfortable for so long. And then, you know, always following up with industry and technical literature. And finally, just time living in your industry. You really get to know people. You really get to know, you know, what are the different business models? How do they work? What's the institutional memory and what things have worked in the past and what things haven't worked? So prospects and opportunities. You know, I don't want to go through this, but in my personal view, I think there's a great opportunity in the biotech industry. You know, the biotech industry, you know, is being looked upon by big pharma. There's a lot of macro changes. We talked about, you know, you hear all the time about the aging population and there's healthcare reform. And certainly all those things are reshaping the healthcare community. But the bottom line is you've got, you know, big pharma is having a lot of cash in the balance sheet. They are restructuring. They're increasingly looking externally for innovation. This quick little metric I did here, if you look at the top 15 pharma's patent expirations over the next 5 years, that represents about 20-25% of 2009 annual revenue. So they're seeing this patent cliff. They
they know they've got to go somewhere to refill their pipelines. And if you look, if you just redistribute some of their R&D dollars to the biotech universe, it's going to be a tidal wave of cash. And just very quickly, in these are some of the things you know already in terms of the types of opportunities and different positions. Investment banking, you can get into as a buy-side associate. Also, we talked about university tech transfer. I think it'd be a great entry point because you really learn about technology valuation and you do license negotiations. And then there's other things, too. Don't forget that there are management consulting and MBA programs. This is the last thing, if I may, Tim, just one bit. These are kind of the lessons that I've learned that I think are sort of the ones that I thought were the most germane. We think, again, we can sort of talk about these later, but I think the key one is always stay hungry and look for opportunities to make the big impact. The easiest way, fastest way to be the operator is to copy somebody else. So I think you've got to always go over the stretch challenge. There's going to be opportunity cost to everything, but I think it's just so important to always be learning and having that growth mindset. Everyone has a balance sheet of assets and liabilities. That's really what we described earlier. You've got to get to know yours. You've got to play on your strengths and understand what your weaknesses are. This is a human, it's a human dynamic. Drive success or failure. Junior's dilemma is something I face a lot, I think we'll all face, which is when you're the low man or woman on the totem pole, how do you have influence without authority? You're junior. So how do you do that? And in my mind, the way you do that is you demonstrate value by marshaling resources and marshaling data, and that's what's going to demonstrate to senior partners that you're valuable. It's when we start leaning forward on the table when you're talking, rather than leaning back with the BlackBerry. Lastly, too, definitely be aware that the business world typically values presence and presentation skills over your major job. It's frustrating, but it has to work because you have to make decisions on limited information. And the last thing I'll say is that this is key: is create the time and courage to network with people who don't need to know you. It doesn't come naturally; it's kind of scary. But those are the types of people who you're ultimately going to be able to hook up with, and I think those are the best opportunities that come from. Because just like in science, business has an apprenticeship component to it. You're going to be learning at someone's knee as they go through things. And so, it's just critical to kind of get to the right people. So, thank you guys very much.